I'm Tavis Smiley, and I am humbled and honored to have you hanging out with us on our program today, and especially in this hour. I remember, well, always remember the very first time I heard this song, my cousin Clifton, who is now deceased. I was visiting my family in Mississippi where I was born, and Clifton played this song, and I said, "What is that?" And told me it's the Commodores and Lionel Richie. And I was there visiting for some days, and we played this song over and over and over again. Turn it up. Turn it up. And bless the Jesus. Lionel has no short list of hits. He's done the thing for decades now. But this is, if you ask me, on my short list, some of the best stuff that Lionel and the Commodores have ever done. Jesus is love. In this hour, noted theologian, political activist, and writer Jim Wallace joins us to talk about his latest text, "The False White Gospel: Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy." I think that title just about says it all. I look forward to what I expect will be a spirited and, dare I say, spirit-filled conversation in this hour with our friend and brother, Jim Wallace. Jim Wallace, it has been far too long since I've heard your voice in my headphones. How are you today, sir?
Well, I'm better for hearing yours, that's for sure, my brother. And I'll tell you, I like to start every show I'm on with that song.
Yeah.
Every show with that song.
Now, it's a door opener for sure. It's a door opener, a conversation starter. It's a healer. It's a helper. So many things can be said about that track, "Jesus is Love." The book, again, is called "The False White Gospel: Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy." As I was going through the book the last few days, of course, preparing for our conversation, it occurred to me that I really could just, and I might just do this, break down this book by the title itself, which allows us to get on the inside of what you share with us. But so let me just, I think I'll start there, and we'll see where this conversation goes. The False White Gospel. Unpack that part for me first, Jim Wallace. What are you calling a false white gospel?
Well, this Eddie Glaude wrote the foreword to the book, and he called the foreword "The Battle of Love," right, mm-hmm. on the song, "The Battle of Love." Huh? But this is the story of Jesus. Is often people try and distort it and use it, manipulate it, for their own power, and that's what's happening right now. White Christian nationalism, let me just, the name spells the problem. First, it's white. Now, we have the most welcoming, including message in the history of the world, and they call it white. Then it's Christian, but they don't mean, you know, they don't mean service and sacrifice and love, they mean control and domination, back to this old dominionist theology. And then nationalism, I mean, I'm getting older in years, Tavis. I wasn't there for the event, but when Jesus rose to the skies mm-hmm. with his disciples, he said, "Go into all the nations, preaching, teaching, making disciples of all nations. Tell them whatever I've commanded you." So the name spells the problem. This is a gospel. This is in the white churches that's been co-opted by nationalism and co-opted by the idol of race, the idol of whiteness. And I tell my own story in the book. I had to find Jesus outside my white church, my white school, and my white neighborhood in Detroit, Michigan, mm-hmm. a long time ago when I was a teenager. And so to rid ourselves of this idol, like the term white evangelical, which we hear on the media all the time, the problem with that term is the most important word in that phrase, not evangelical, mm-hmm. but white.
Yeah.
White Christian. It's not Christian. but white. So this book is trying to put the Christian back in. So I take, you know, six iconic biblical texts that you, Tavis, are very familiar with. Mm-hmm. I wrestled with them. I went the commentaries. I prayed over them. And I'm trying to refresh and reframe them for this moment right now.
Yeah.
So the book is saying what's wrong, this idolatry, this false worship, this heresy taking us away from Christ. But it's also, how do we go forward? How do we, I say in the book that every movement has to decide who they can persuade and who they have to defeat mm-hmm. at the ballot box. Yeah. And that's where we are right now.
There's a lot to talk about at this hour, as you can tell. I wanted to give Jim some space to just lay the foundation. He's laid it brilliantly, and so I'm ready to start questioning him about this text. It's called The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. Going to be a good hour with Jim Wallace on Tavis Smiley.
From the Merck Park with love, this is Tavis Smiley. Smart talk for curious people just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Jim Wallace, who's author of a new book called The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. No more propitious time for a conversation like this than now, given that Donald Trump is selling Bibles to raise money for his campaign. We'll talk about that part as we move through this hour. Jim Wallace, I was just having a conversation with the noted comedian, brilliant comedian, Roy Wood Jr., who last year was the featured stand-up at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And Roy and I were just talking about what happens when people take the words of comedians and assign intent, assume intent to what they were saying for their own purposes. You see where I'm going here. My question is, what happens when people assume intent and assign intent to the text as written, when they assume and assign intent to the words of Jesus? What happens?
Jesus once said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things I tell you?" Which indeed goes right to the text. I'm trying to let Jesus do the talking in this book. And the original title I was going to make for this was, Do We Believe It or Not? Because you can't keep saying you believe these things. Saying you're a Christian, you're a follower of Jesus, and then completely deny or ignore or contradict everything he's saying. So on January 6th, Tavis, you and I were watching this terrible insurrection mm-hmm. at the Capitol, and these violent attackers, they were doing identity theft against Jesus. Mm. I mean, they were shouting his name as they took over the Senate floor, and they had their flags and their Confederate flags and their Jesus flags, and it was such a sacrilege. It was a lot of other things that people say it was insurrection. I say it's also a sacrilege. So what I want to do is not just talk about Trump's idolatry, his false worship, and his heresy, overturning Jesus' teachings and his sacrilege. But I want to talk about what can bring us back. And as you know well, every single revival movement or renewal movement in the church's history always is going back to Jesus again and again. So, and for me, the timing of this book coming right at Easter mm-hmm. is, for me, a blessed thing. Because, Tavis, this is an Easter book. It's about resistance and hope at the same time. And so I want to confront and resist the American white idolatry of Donald Trump and his minions and his followers. But I want to lay out the kind of new American church that is possible, mm-hmm. possible.
Yeah.
I call that a remnant church at the end of the book.
Yeah, I want to talk about how you imagine how you envision this sort of new church, to use your phrase, what it is that you lay out in the text that can help bring us back. Before I talk about bringing us back, let me stay in real time. This story has been, you know, around for a few days, brewing. This story that is that is the story that is of Donald Trump and these Bibles. Yesterday, I heard on the news Raphael Warnock's comments on one of the Sunday shows on Sunday. Raphael is not just a senator, not just a senator, as you know, but also the pastor of the famed Ebenezer Baptist Church, once pastored by Dr. King and his father, Daddy King. So Raphael had his say, which I thought was pretty powerful. But what say you, Jim Wallace, about this story of Trump selling these Bibles?
Well, I talk about Raphael in the book. He was a friend long before he was a senator. I love the fact that Raphael says, I'm a pastor and also a U.S. senator. He keeps the order clear. And Trump has made a commodity of the Bible. He's selling Bibles to pay his legal fees with the upcoming trial about a porn star. And so I remember that vivid day when he got the military.
Hey, Jim, let me just cut in for a second because I have to pause because you laid that out so brilliantly. Sometimes it's the simple stuff that just gets our attention. But I love how you just, I just want to just underline this one more time. Trump, as you heard Jim Wallace just say, is selling Bibles to raise money to help him in his case with a porn star. I just wanted to underline that one more time. All right, Jim Wallace, proceed, proceed.
Well, and let's take that even deeper. He's selling Bibles. But Trump is not a leader. He's a marketer. He's a marketer. And he's marketing racial grievance, for sure. But even deeper, every country, every nation has its better angels and worst demons. And our demons, our racial demons, run very deep in this country. Trump is marketing our worst demons. Say it again. He's marketing our worst demons in this country.
Yes.
And the better angels have an uphill battle against them in this election season. This isn't just about politics or left and right. It's way deeper now. Faith is at stake. It's a test of democracy, to be sure, but it's also a test of faith, a test of faith. And the third test for me, Tavis, it's the test for a new generation because they're watching. They're watching to see how churches stand up and respond, or if they do at all. And so a whole lot's at stake. There are something like 60 countries having an election in 2024.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Yeah.
It's a critical time. And I want the faith factor to be clearer. The faith factor cannot be dominated by the white Christian nationalists, this false white gospel. And I want to bring the story back, the real story, the old story, the Jesus story. And I think that is the only thing going to win some people back or to confront them at a deep level about the use and abuse of the gospel for the sake of power.
I'm going to follow you through this hour, as this audience hears me say all the time, because I believe that you are better at what you do when you're sitting in a chair like I sit in, when you are following the conversation, not trying to lead it, when you're listening charitably, you're listening generously, you can be a better talk show host. And so I, my role here every day is to listen to what I'm being told and to interrogate what I'm hearing. And so I want to do a few things now, given what you said already. I want to go back a few minutes ago to this notion of what you refer to as the battle of love. You're talking about the introduction to your book, The Battle of Love.
By Eddie Glaude.
By Eddie Glaude, We live in a world where people hear this phrase, they see it all the time. I am fond of using it because I like it, but it's become a slogan. I've seen it on T-shirts. Matter of fact, somebody sent me a T-shirt once with this on it. It's a bumper. It's a bumper sticker. But everybody uses this phrase, love wins. Love wins. Very popular phrase these days. And I believe, ultimately, that love does win, even when it appears oftentimes that it is losing. And God knows I've been in situations where it appears that love was getting its behind whooped. But at the end of the day, I do believe that love wins. I'm trying to juxtapose this notion, mm-hmm. Jim Wallace, that love wins with the battle of love. Talk to me about this notion of love winning. But in real time, in this present moment, your argument, your belief is that we are in a battle of love. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think you just said it well. Love is embattled right now. It's embattled. So let me bring up some of these texts. The one that sure. strikes me here is this Luke 10, 25, 37. A lot of your listeners probably know their Bibles or grew up with their Bibles. This is the Good Samaritan parable.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And here's this lawyer who comes up to Jesus trying to trick him. And he says, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus uses the word. He says, well, love God with your heart, soul, strength, all of it. And then love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's the summation of the law in many of our faith traditions. And really, it says that you have to demonstrate your love of your neighbor to prove you love God. Mm-hmm. They're deeply connected. Mm-hmm. So then this lawyer says, so who is my neighbor? Now, Tavis, I think he was a Washington lawyer in that text. Because I can tell, I know that tone of voice,
yeah.
that tone of voice, right? He's not saying, who is my neighbor? Let me walk. He's saying, exactly who is my neighbor? How can I keep him apart from me? So Jesus answers his question. Who is my neighbor is the most important question for the future of democracy in America and for the future of genuine multiracial democracy in the United States of America. So he says, well, let me give you an example. There's this Samaritan. Now, let's be clear. For the Judeans that Jesus was addressing, there were no good Samaritans. They were mixed race. They were dangerous. They were traveling in cartels with drugs. No, that's the other group of immigrants in the South, right? They were being othered. They're being othered, right? Like so many people are today. And so here's the Samaritan. And two religious leaders pass this man by. He's on the road, half beaten. All the scholars say he was a Jewish man. A Jewish man on the ground, and his religious leaders passed him by. And for whatever reasons, they just were too busy. But here's a Samaritan. Here is the other to the Judeans who stops to help one other to him mm-hmm. on the ground. Mm-hmm. The despised Samaritan helps one in a society who he is always being othered by. So my title of that chapter is, your neighbor probably doesn't live in your neighborhood. So that's what love means. It means to love your neighbor. It doesn't mean that parable, oh, let's spend more of my time volunteering once a week or something. No, it's about approaching those who are your neighbor, even though you've been taught to treat them like enemies. Donald Trump is projecting a political trajectory of fear and hate and violence. In stark contrast to that, Jesus is saying, no, your neighbor is the one who is different than you. And he even says to love your enemies.
Yeah.
Trump wants to make enemies. Jesus wants us to love our neighbor and even lower enemies. That parable is crucial to the future and defines the nature of love, which is what you asked.
In this book, The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy, Jim Wallace does, as he just did brilliantly now, he takes these six texts, these six passages of Scripture, and helps us in real time, in the real world, in this moment of Donald Trump, to find our way back. We're talking, and we'll be talking more about how we work our way back, what can bring us back, what can save this fragile democracy from the reckoning, if anything can, that we are ultimately going to face as we're on the precipice, I believe, of failing. But one of the things I want to get to right quick, got about 2 minutes here now, Jim. We'll continue when we come forward. But let me just stick with these six texts for just a moment. I want to ask you in a few minutes how you chose these six. You've already unpacked one of them for us, the Good Samaritan text, how you chose the other five. But what is it about these parables? They are essentially what I would call didactic narratives. These didactic narratives, these parables. What is it about these parables that I and you love so much? My favorite parable happens to be the parable of the talents. I gave a speech once about the parable of the talents and my takeaways from that particular passage of scripture. But what is it about these parables, these didactic narratives that we can get inside of and learn from and advance our cause?
Well, you and I have talked about biblical texts before. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have that conversation now all over again around the country, because these are the texts that really can, well, Jesus says in John 8, you'll know the truth, mm-hmm. and the truth will make you free. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean the opposite of truth is just lying a lot, like Donald Trump does. No, the opposite of truth is captivity. Mm. Captivity. Truth and freedom are indivisible. And what we're doing here, we're trying to find the truth, because until we find the truth, we are captive to the power of the strongman. Pontius Pilate and Jesus were having a debate about the truth the day he was crucified. And Pilate was losing the debate. And when he was, he said, oh, what is truth anyway? Mm-hmm. What is truth anyway? Because he didn't want anyone to think there was truth, because he wanted people to believe him, the strongman. So strong men want to make us think there is no truth, for they have all the truth. And that's a parable that can set us free by speaking the truth.
As we say in the black church, that'll preach. That'll preach. I've never thought about it in that way. But the opposite of truth is not just people lying to you, but the opposite of truth is captivity. When you are denied access to the truth, when nobody speaks the truth, then the suffering of everyday people gets rendered invisible and they remain in captivity. The opposite of truth is captivity. Oh, that'll preach. And speaking of preaching, we have one with us today in this hour. His name is Jim Wallace, noted theologian and brilliant author, best-selling author. His latest text is called The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy More. When we come forward with Jim Wallace, on Tavis Smile.
Unapologetically progressive. Progressive. Unapologetically black. 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 You're tapped into Tavis Smile. Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Let's get back to more of Tavis Smiley right now.
More of Jim Wallace right now, author of the new book, The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. Honored to have him on this program. Jim Wallace, in this book, as I mentioned earlier, as you mentioned earlier, you really unpack six different texts to help us work our way back. We'll talk about working our way back here in a moment. You unpacked one already for us, and that is the Good Samaritan story. How did you choose, of all the things in the Bible, you got what, 66 books, rather. I'm getting together. I couldn't get the word books out of my mouth. 66 books, all those chapters in those books, and you chose six texts. How, sir?
Well, these are all familiar texts to me and to you and to many of your listeners, I'm sure. But I think they come to mind and heart in this moment, mm-hmm. as ancient texts, old texts, but need a new application right now. For example, there's political noise all around us. In fact, Tavis, you and I, part of our vocation is to listen to the political noise and try and sort it out, mm-hmm. try and provide a perspective on all the noise. So I love the first book of the Bible, first chapter in the first book of the Bible, Genesis 1:26. I love how it starts. Imagine all the noise that we listen to every day. In the middle of that, it says, then God said, shut up. Then God said, be quiet. And he says, let us create humankind, all humankind, in our own image and after our own likeness. So this is the foundation spiritually for all of our earthly talk about human rights, voting rights, all the rest, because we are divinely created with the image of God, which makes us all completely equal in God's eyes. So I began to apply that to voting rights. I'm in the middle of a big campaign. It's called Faith United to Save Democracy. Barbara Williams Skinner and I are tag teaming on that.
Oh, yes.
We're training poll chaplains all around the country, 1,000 so far, in perilous polling places. Voter suppression is rampant. I'm going to many of those states on this book tour. Now, here's the thing. To deny, suppress, subvert, or not count a vote because of the color of someone's skin or any other reason is nothing less than an assault on Imago Dei, the image of God, an attack on Imago Dei, on God's image. This isn't just sort of a political calculation, Democrats, Republicans. This is an attack on who we are made in the image of God. And I remember I had a conversation. We talked to secretaries of state for fair voting practices. I was on a call with one of them once in a battleground state. He said he was a person of faith. I said, have you ever read this text in Genesis? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Have you ever applied it to voting rights? He said, no, I've never thought about that. I said, well, it's time to apply Genesis to voting rights. So I would choose a text that the Imago Dei, I call our movement, Faith United to Save Democracy, an Imago Dei movement. Mm-hmm. And I'll be going around the country recruiting clergy and other church leaders that want to be poll chaplains at critical places on our election days. So I choose a text that really speaks to the moment that we're in.
Yeah.
And while they're old and very familiar, these now have a new meaning for me.
Yeah. You said earlier in this conversation that Donald Trump is not so much a leader as he is a marketer, not a leader, but a marketer. Here's a question you've been asked 1,000 times, but I've asked you this question in our conversations, but every time I talk to you, we're in a different moment. And every time I talk to you, there's more evidence of how bizarre Donald Trump really is. And yet, his embrace by these white evangelicals, you made the point earlier, one word in that sentence is more important than the other, and it ain't evangelical. Mm-hmm. But
right.
What, for those who never heard you answer this question on my program, in real time, because I could have asked you this, and I did, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, but in this moment, what is it to your mind that yet, underline the word yet, that yet allows for this white evangelical embrace of Donald Trump after all that we've seen and all that we now know and the story still developing every single day, they have not let loose of their hold, their grip. White evangelicals, that is, have not let go of their grip, their hold, their embrace, their hug of Donald Trump. What is that about?
Well, I tell the story in the book about this word evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
The word actually comes from the first sermon of Jesus in Luke, where he quotes Isaiah. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me.
Oh, yes.
Because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. Now, the word for good news there is evangel, the good news.
Mm-hmm.
And the president of an evangelical seminary recently said to me over lunch, he said, I have the most abusive job in the world. I said, well, here I am, the leader of a major evangelical seminary, when evangelicalism is destroying the evangel.
Wow. Wow.
Destroying the evangel.
Wow.
And so this is a political takeover. I also share in the book of how evangelicalism was politically taken over by people like and Paul Wallerich and Richard Viguerie has told me that the way they did it, they went to Jerry Falwell and Ben Robertson, and they said, give us your mailing lists, and we'll make you household words in America. That's what they said. Mm. And that's how all this started, way back in 1980. Now this is culminating. You heard me talk about what I often call America's Original Sin. I did a book called that once. Mm-hmm. And America's Original Sin, I think, Brian Stevenson says how it evolves, how it continues in mass incarceration, lingers. I think it's reaching a crescendo, Tavis, a climatic point where America's original sin is fighting for its life right now by any means necessary. And we're reaching this moment where we will finally become what the world doesn't have yet anywhere, a genuinely multiracial democracy. It's fighting that with everything it can do. And so this is a moment. This isn't just incremental progress. Yeah. This is a showdown, showdown of whether we can't transform democracy unless we save it.
Yeah.
But we might lose it in this election.
That showdown then takes us straight to a conversation about resistance and hope, two words that Jim Wallace used earlier in this conversation, but we ain't had a chance to really unpack. We'll talk about, in this present moment, notions of resistance and hope when we come forward with Jim Wallace on Tavis Smiley.
This is getting good.
Yeah, man.
Tavis Smiley, continues when we come forward. He's rooting for everybody black.
Everybody black. Black.
More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now. Right now.
More of Jim Wallace coming your way right about now. Watching my time is getting away from me. So, Jim Wallace, after all we've talked about in this hour, I want to pivot now to talk about resistance and hope. As you defined it, what can help bring us back? Mm-hmm. So talk to me then about resistance and hope in this present moment.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, back to your last question, why have these white Christians hung on and still, and I found that as a teenage kid growing up in Detroit, something really big seemed really wrong and nobody would talk about it in my white world, my white church, white neighborhood. So I do what I tell my students, trust your questions and follow them to wherever they take you. So my questions took me to the city. I took jobs alongside young black men who were my age, but I was making money for college. They were supporting families. And their life stories were so different than mine. They helped me to see how it was so different being black or white in Detroit. And I had these epiphanies time and time again, which just shattered my world. And I understood that what the white captivity, of the church prevented the kind of relationships that can change us. And so when I just showed up at black church, with my obvious white boy questions, and they took me in and patiently answered all my questions on my spirit.
Jim's phone is powering out. We got to get this fixed. Here we get down right to the wire, talking about resistance and hope. I would say the devil is a lie because he is, number one. But number two, you get to that part of the conversation where you talk about how to resist this, and then the phone line starts to waffle on you. Our guest in this hour is Jim Wallace. His book is called The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. Jim, while Miles is on the phone talking, trying to get your phone line straightened out, I was saying to the audience, as we say often around here, the devil is a lie. We get to the point in the conversation where we're talking about resistance, and then your phone line starts to waffle on me. But finish your point, sir.
My point is that black churches started in the hush harbors, where slaves went to worship away from their white masters. to learn to read and read the Bible and find their story and their liberation in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so those hush harbors were on the margins of American society, on the edges. And that's what produced the Black church. And which church in America has impacted the world more than any other church?
Oh, yeah.
The Black church.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. So resistance comes from the edges and forms something new. So right now, I'm hopeful because I find a whole new generation of young white believers, not a majority.
Yeah.
Just so hungry for something new. They don't want to affiliate with religion all around them. But many of them are willing now to join Black and brown church leaders to create something that I call a remnant church,
yeah.
A new American church. So I'm not just against Trump's idolatry.
Sure.
I don't want to just defeat him. I want to see what we can now find as a new American church. Eddie Glaude says it well. He said, we're at a time when everything is collapsing and everything is possible at the same time. So I'm entering this Easter season with a great sense of hope. I'm going all over the country to talk to, big town meetings in my hometown of Detroit, led by Stephen Bland, who is the leader of our faith, United to Save Democracy in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a big meeting on Saturday, and we're going to bring all kind of people together who can stand together and fight together and resist and struggle. The hope,
yeah,
of creating something new.
Every time I hear that word resist, I think of that great poem by Sonia Sanchez, brilliant poet who has a brilliant piece of work she's written. And that word just comes out at you, resist, resist, resist. And nobody can say it like Sonia Sanchez can. Our remaining moments with Jim Wallace when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. More honesty than you can handle.
More empowerment than you can imagine.
You're tuned in to Tavis Smiley.
Got 3 minutes left. 3 minutes left in what has been, as I predicted, a spirited, and spirit-filled conversation with Jim Wallace, noted theologian, activist, writer, and author of the new book, The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. I close with two quick questions in the 3 minutes I have left here, Jim Wallace. The first of those two questions is simply this. To what extent do you expect the faith factor to, in fact, be a factor in 2024, come November?
Factor to be dominated by white Christian nationalists. I want to step up Black churches, Hispanic churches, younger white believers are stepping up and want to make a difference. And so the powers that be want people to be skeptical, cynical, and disengaged because they win. And yet the last text I want to leave with your community is, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So Desmond Tutu, my chair at Georgetown's named after my mentor, Desmond Tutu. He taught me the difference between optimism and hope. Optimism is a feeling. Hope, choice. You make of because of the thing that we call faith. And my definition of hope is believing in spite of the evidence and then watching the evidence change. That's where we are. We have to be the faith factor, shape the faith factor, not by withdrawing, but being engaged, active. All of us are influencers someplace. Our communities, families, friends, we're in places where we can make a difference. This book is a tool. It's just my two cents, Davis. All it is my two cents. But if I can get other people to do their two cents, I believe in a God that multiplies the value of all of our two cents.
Yeah. It's gotten dicey here at the very end. We had a great conversation until the very end. That phone started to fail us, and yet we got through it. So I'll leave it there. I that's a great place to close. And this audience has heard me opine on more than one occasion about the difference between optimism and hope. And here comes Jim Wallace now. Here comes Jim Wallace unpacking that as he understands it from the late great Desmond Tutu. Not a much better source to quote than Tutu on the difference between optimism and hope, and I couldn't agree with him more in that regard. The book is called The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy. Jim Wallace, an honor as always, sir, to have you on this program. We'll do it again somewhere down the road. Have a great tour for your book. All the best, my friend.
It's always fun to be with you, Tavis. Great to talk again.
Thank you, sir. All the best to you. 3 hours gone just like that. Back here tomorrow, Lord willing, to do it all over again. Until then, thanks for listening to Tavis Smiley. And as always, you keep the faith.